Hello from Brooklyn. I'm Brendan Hart, and welcome to Super Cities, a no BS deep dive conversation about the people and trends moving cities forward. All views expressed are my own and do not reflect our sponsors or partners. Let's get into it. On this episode of Super Cities, we do a deep dive with Rob Walker, director of the Aspen Security Forum, an incredible foreign policy and national security event held every summer in Aspen, Colorado. We cover emerging foreign policy challenges, leadership, and the national security enterprise. Rob is a graduate of West Point and came to the Aspen Institute after retiring from the U.S. Army. Let's hear from Rob. We like to set the stage with some background and context. Talk to me a little bit about where you grew up, how you ended up working through the military and landing at Aspen.
Sure. I grew up in South Mississippi and South Louisiana. Always had an aspiration for national service of some part. Grew up wanting to go to the Air Force Academy and be a jet pilot.
That's actually funny knowing you now that you wanted to be a jet pilot.
Yeah. Too much Top Gun and Iron Eagle.
I get it.
But ended up going to West Point, United States Military Academy, and became a field artillery officer in the U.S. Army. Spent 21 years total in uniform and really just fell in love with the idea of national security policy. And on retirement, decided I want to stay close to that. Through networking efforts, I happened to get introduced to a few folks here at the Aspen Institute and was very fortunate to land as the director of the Aspen Security Forum a short time after my retirement from the military.
Great. So 21 years in uniform. Where was your last duty station? Were you in the Beltway?
I was. My last duty station was at Crystal City. It was an extension of the Army staff, and I worked on U.S. Army physical evaluation boards and the policies that we train towards and enact to determine whether soldiers that incur serious injuries or debilitating conditions are continued to be fit for duty or whether they are not fit for duty.
Sounds like important work.
It was. It was very important.
Especially at a time of war, right? So you transitioned to the Aspen Institute. When was that?
I landed here in January of 2017.
Okay. Talk to me a little bit about the Aspen Security Forum.
Thank you. The Aspen Security Forum is one of the world's premier national security conferences. We think we're the best in the United States. We bring together about 500 folks from the United States government, private industry, concerned citizens, think tanks, et cetera. And of course, foreign partners as well from foreign governments, foreign non-government or intergovernmental organizations. We talk all things global and national security from a U.S. policy perspective. We run for 3 days and 4 nights out in Aspen, Colorado each summer, usually mid-July. And we tend to make a lot of news.
I had the honor of attending last year's security forum, and it was both great and newsworthy.
Well, thank you.
So kudos to you and your team. Talk to me a little bit about the structure of the security forum.
Sure.
Is it, some of these conferences can get sort of big and overwhelming, but the security forum felt like a more intimate, smaller, sort of more dynamic conference. Is that by design?
That is by design. I think it occurs more naturally and organically because of the limitations of the space in which we host it. But it's not something we wish to break either. The intimacy that you noted, we hear from principals, from attendees, from underwriters, that is actually one of the draws of the forum. We've heard from national security figures that they actually get more engagement with their counterparts from other agencies and departments while in Aspen for a couple of days than they do here in D.C. for the rest of the calendar year. So the intimacy is something that we wish to continue. I would add to that, the intimacy also encourages collaborative engagement. And you'll see, and you saw firsthand, you get to walk around and stand in the buffet line with a national security figure. You walk into, have a meeting engagement on the way to a session or chat with them under the shade of an aspen tree. I mean, it's something that we want to continue going forward as the forum continues to grow in prominence. We don't wish to do away with sort of that feeling of engagement and collaboration.
What's the breakdown of attendees at the security forum between sort of current government officials, former government officials, journalists, scholars.
Sure. So I'll start with the audience first. And we sell about 360 passes to attend the Aspen Security Forum. I would say our audience is made up of largely of concerned citizens, then a flavoring of former government officials, former military types, contractors, those who work in the security space on various levels. And we've also attracted quite a few senior former government officials as attendees. Just they pay us to sit in a seat and hear the conversations we host. Then let's move to stage. We typically host about 70 speakers and moderators over the course of the entire forum. And we break it down in terms of current government officials, incumbent officials who are senior in the government, who are seeing things from a strategic perspective, who are able to answer policy questions and drive policy conversations and ultimately make the decisions. We also hear from a few more folks down at the, let's call it the operational level, who are the ones who are impacted and have to carry out said policies. So the idea there is to have, you know, the 30,000 foot, if you will, strategic conversation, and then sort of bring in the operational folks to fill in the details for us of why a policy makes sense or how a policy might be modified to make it easier for the men and women on the ground. We also bring in former government officials, and I would note last year, one panel in particular, we had two former Obama administration officials talking about the Trump administration's decision to pull out of the JCPOA, the Iran nuclear deal. Notably, over the past few years, we've had other former government officials both from both administrations. It's not strictly just from the most recent former administration. And then we bring in military types, typically 3- and 4-star general and flag officers. We look at the combatant command commanders, the Special Operations Command, the Central Command, Indo-Pacific Command, et cetera, as sort of our primary list of invitees. And then for sort of the 3-star level, we're looking for those who are in charge of agencies such as the Defense Intelligence Agency and others, again, at the cutting edge of policy and decision-making and carrying it out. Another community that we bring in a bit more than I think other conferences do is the intelligence community, and we rely heavily on like the CIA and the FBI and others who are gathering, you know, intelligence on our adversaries and helping us to inform policies. And they bring a lot of great insight into how things should be shaped and how things should be discussed. The final component, I would say, is probably the think tank and academic community. And we don't rely as heavily on them, but we do bring them in certainly as perspective, as expertise, as additional round out of a conversation. And forgive me, the truly final is our private industry partners. And we bring in representatives from around private industry, multiple sectors, who are engaged in security questions. As you can imagine, cybersecurity is a huge question of national importance right now. So we bring in several cybersecurity experts to talk from an industry perspective, what they're seeing and how they're dealing with it. Other nodes, critical infrastructure and others have been represented over time. The ones that come to mind, 2018 rather, of course, were Microsoft, Lockheed Martin, Symantec, some others have been represented on stage.
I know that a core pillar of the Aspen Institute and the Security Forum is that the dialogue is nonpartisan, which is increasingly refreshing in our current political climate. Talk to me about some emerging sort of national security issues that you're coming across that are important or emerging in the national security space that may not be on the radar of people outside of the Beltway.
Yeah, no, that's a great question. Things that aren't making the headlines that we should probably be more concerned about. Things that are 5-10 years down the road is true concerns.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, climate change is one of the biggest.
Yeah.
And I know this podcast is geared towards discussions of cities, and cities are going to have to deal with climate change on multiple levels. The first of which I can imagine is going to be access to water and availability of clean, potable water and the quality of said water. And you're starting to see a strain on some of that resource in localized areas. I mean, we can point to Cape Town in this past mm-hmm. year, Sao Paulo in 2015, and others
right.
have come up on critical shortages. And, you know, that's exacerbated by climate change. It's also exacerbated by the growth and boom of cities and how we're increasingly urbanized.
Mass urbanization, I say this often, but between now and 2015, an additional 2.5 billion people will move to cities.
That's incredible.
Just imagine the strain on existing infrastructure.
Absolutely. You look at places like Niger and in Nigeria and the growth of population there. You look at India and China, who are building entirely new cities. And, you know, what does that mean to their resources and their access, and how are we treating our natural resources? Are we being responsible with them? Are we looking at water as a finite resource and beginning to distribute it and clean it, et cetera, in ways that make sense and that are efficient? And is our distribution stuck in the past? Is our agricultural process stuck in the past? So there's concerns there that we need to be thinking about yep. over the long term. More concerns that people are more familiar with, I would say, is obviously the rise of China and the increasing strategic competition between the United States and the West and China. Russia is still a concern, of course, and we'll talk a lot about both of those countries in the 2019 Aspen Security Forum. Another one of concern is sort of the Western Hemisphere and how there seems to be a resurgence of socialism in this area. And we can talk about, you know, obviously the collapse of Venezuela and the pending change in the Maduro government, perhaps. But other countries in the area have also suffered greatly. There's Nicaragua, and of course, Cuba has always been a thorn in the side.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think not a lot of folks pay attention to issues going on in the continent of Africa. And I would relate that back to the China competition as well. And, you know, the Chinese are going in, they're underwriting massive infrastructure deals throughout the continent, bringing in their own labor force to enact and to finish these infrastructure projects, and then basically leave them there.
And they're debt financed.
And they're debt financed.
So the host country ends up owing the Chinese
Absolutely.
Government.
And if I recall a headline today, they just... They essentially forgave a large debt to the nation of Cameroon.
Oh, interesting. I didn't see that.
Yeah. So, I mean, you can imagine that the Chinese use of their soft power and their economic influence is absolutely incredible right now. And in my opinion, from my seat, except for discussions about counterterrorism in the Sahel and Sudan and places like that, we've effectively ceded the continent. We're not truly competing with the Chinese. Our focus is on counterterrorism on that continent.
Right.
Whereas we should probably be more focused on infrastructure development and aid development. Specific ways.
I have I want to dig into China
sure.
a little bit,
sure.
if that's okay. I tend to believe that the U.S.-China competition will be a heavily city-based competition. A lot of the dialogue is about South China Sea, and obviously that's important. But I think the dimensions of the U.S.-China competition are going to be deeply related to things like economic espionage mm-hmm. and intellectual property, to 5G,
right.
to innovation. And as you mentioned, China has this strategy to dominate next-generation technologies. And they're able to do it at scale because they need cities to house their large and growing population.
Sure.
Talk to me a little bit about how you think about Chinese innovation, how China is approaching advanced technologies, how that fits into this sort of great power competition that has recently been announced by the U.S. Department of Defense.
Yeah, absolutely. So the great power competition is on multiple levels. I think we are too easily drawn into the correlation to the Cold War.
Right.
And that was much more of a military conflict. We did right. not have a significant economic relationship with the USSR. So I mean, by necessity, the two are drastically different. We're inextricably intertwined with the Chinese economy. In
for
so
better
many
or
ways.
Worse, right?
For better or worse, absolutely. So you mentioned the South China Sea. Yes, there may be there's a legal framework question there. There's a military question there. It is important to discuss, but I think what you mentioned, rightfully so, the idea of innovation and technology and social advancement is going to be the real competition and is the real competition. Consider the Chinese model. There's a lot of state investment and a lot of state-owned corporations that are taking money from the national government, funneling it into their research and development, and, you know, drastically outpacing our government-funded investment. And if we look back, 50 years or so, we can pick up tons of examples of U.S. investment that advanced a major technology. Just look at DARPA, invented the internet, sure. Invented so many things that are beneficial
history
to the world.
History of Silicon Valley.
Yes, exactly.
Is government finance.
Right. And we're seeing that shift here. We are less, think of some recent examples. There's a solar company, the name eludes me right now, that the Obama administration invested heavily in that ultimately was a flop. And, the U.S. sees that as a major failure. The Chinese are continuing to invest in so many of their own companies and pushing the envelope forward on innovation from their government, investment. And we're not matching that pace. And I'm not saying that we have to. I'm not saying we have to match it, dollar for dollar from government side. But we have to create a more stable environment for innovation within our own country. And we have to, I think we have to foster that mindset and that ability to invest and invent. And of course, we have to protect it. And I would point to several government reports that have come out lately, especially from the National Counterintelligence and Security Center, on the idea that, intellectual property rights are being violated constantly, there are folks coming into the country from China and other places who are learning from our innovative culture in Silicon Valley, Austin, around the country, and then taking that and going back to China and building their own model and their own copy of these products. So it's that's a concern. That's outside of my area of expertise, but it's something that definitely fits into this strategic framework, this strategic competition discussion.
So it's one of these challenging things. We have an open society, mm-hmm. and open societies can be compromised in a variety of ways.
Absolutely.
We also have at this point, decades-long negative trajectory of public-private partnerships mm-hmm. That we – and the combination of those two trends, I don't think positions us – I think we need to do a better job of those two things, securing society and finding mechanisms like the Aspen Security Forum to drive meaningful collaboration between the public sector and the private sector and entities of innovation on both sides.
Certainly.
Where can listeners find you online, find out more about the Aspen Security Forum?
Sure. My profile would be found first at the aspeninstitute.org, and there's a plethora of information there about what the Institute does. We are broad-ranging. We're not just security. We address problems of urban development. We address problems of rural development. Other issues that help to move us towards a better society. But I would also point folks directly to aspensecurityforum.org, which is the website for the Security Forum. You can find the agenda from the past 9 years. It's proud to say we're celebrating our 10th anniversary this summer.
Congratulations.
And thank you. Registration is open, and we invite people to come out and join us July 17th through 20th in Aspen, Colorado.
It's not a bad place to be
not
at the
all.
End of July.
It's not a bad place to be any time of
there,
the year.
Well said. Well said. Rob Walker, thanks so much for your time.
Brendan, thank you.
Cheers.
I appreciate it.
That does it for this episode of Super Cities. Before we go, some real talk. Cities feel broken, too expensive, too crowded, too chaotic. So we created Super Cities to elevate the people and trends moving cities forward. This movement is just getting started, so please rate, review, and subscribe to Super Cities and tag us using hashtag Super Cities. Your support really helps, and I'm thankful for it. This is Brendan Hart at Super Cities, signing off for now.